You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sunday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. We are here to discuss the latest and greatest in the Ducks offseason news and notes. A few topics to get into this week. We're going to break down the latest in the Ducks coaching search. Some names are starting to pop up, and there's a lot of buzz around the search and how things could really ramp up this week by the time you're listening. Mm-hmm. If it's Monday, everyone seems to agree that there's going to be some news broken this week. So we might as well get out ahead of it and at least make some predictions. We're also going to talk some trade rumors. The Ducks were recently linked to Jason Zucker out of Minnesota, who has now been unsuccessfully traded twice from the Wild.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I would be very surprised if he were to start next season in Minnesota. And just because The Athletic is talking about it, and Jake and I got in a mini debate before we started recording, we may talk about the prospect of trading Corey Perry. Scott Cullen on his personal blog actually did an off-season kind of breakdown of the Ducks, and he talked a little bit about the possibility of trading Corey Perry. So as you can imagine, we should get a pretty fired up Jake for that topic. That's really what this is about. It's not about the actual topic itself.
You're trying to make me feel emotions again after yesterday?
Yes, yes. Jake and I got to enjoy a good game of football in Huntington Beach yesterday. You may have heard of this game. The Champions League final, Liverpool defeating Tottenham Hotspur 2-0 in what was a pretty... It depends who you're cheering for. I think that's really your interpretation of that game. As a neutral party who had an interest in neither side winning, fairly entertaining, but the three-week layoff may be costing some quality in this one.
That's kind of the consensus from everyone around, is that it has to do with that layoff being kind of... That took away from it, because you had two teams that were kind of not exactly up to speed, weren't able to really do a whole lot in the attacking half. Not going to lie, definitely sad. Definitely sad by the result of my team losing, but had a really good time at Monk's Addiction?
Monk's Addiction.
Monk's Addiction in Huntington Beach, a little Spurs bar, I guess. So
it was cool.
It was packed with everyone singing. It was fun. It was a good time, good atmosphere. Good place to watch the match. Just would have wished there was a goal to be able to celebrate a little bit with everyone that was there.
Yeah, and in other non-NHL, non-Ducks news, Golden State Warriors making it a 1-1 series tonight with a huge win in Toronto. So, sorry, Jake. My team wins.
Your team win, my team lost.
Okay, but
LAFC won at least.
Yes, and I weirdly watched that as well. Clearly, I had a very busy weekend.
You texted me about it, actually.
There was a bench-clearing brawl. So, I mean, that doesn't really happen very often.
No.
It was noteworthy. Also, huge upset in boxing. We're just doing the weekend rundown at this point. So let's jump into it here, though. So, really, the biggest news that we've gotten in the Ducks universe in the past 7 days has been that the Ducks coaching search has expanded. So what kind of felt like it was going to be a shoe-in for Dallas Eakins specifically, we all kind of figured, okay, they're giving him time to focus on the San Diego Gulls playoff run. And once that finishes, which it has, then we may start getting some news. We haven't gotten news that Eakins is, you know, going to be hired soon, but we have gotten news that the search is picking up. Specifically, and I think that this is a good place to start before we start discussing the different names that have popped up, a report from John Shannon of Sportsnet that Bob Murray, that the Samuelis, the family that owns the Anaheim Ducks, Henry and Susan Samueli, favor Dallas Eakins, but that Bob Murray would like to do a more thorough search. Paraphrasing there, but that's the gist of the report. So, Jake, we've talked a lot about this, but we actually haven't recorded anything about this. So what do you make of this kind of internal, not debate, but clearly there's a little teeny tiny friction there. Clearly one side has an opinion and the other has a very staunchly different one.
I mean, it makes sense, kind of, I guess, from a perspective that Bob Murray doesn't exactly want to just give the job to Dallas Eakins and kind of basically make him the head coach without kind of exhausting all options and seeing kind of what he has to work with. The reason why that makes sense is basically you look at his most recent hire with Randy Carlisle, you look at how that went, the fact that he had to let him go after three seasons. There was really only one good season out of those. And this past season was one of the biggest disasters of a season that the Ducks have had in a very, very long time, specifically since the Samuelis took over. And probably the last time that you could look at and say the Ducks had a disaster of a season kind of like this would have been Randy Carlisle's other final year as Ducks head coach. So I think that he probably knows that this is potentially his last head coaching hire for the Ducks franchise as the general manager. And I think you brought this up, potentially his last head coaching hire overall as general manager, because if you look at GMs throughout the league, they don't get recycled that much unless they have a pedigree of success and cup championships and things like that. So he knows that it's no longer just the franchise kind of that he has to lead forward. It's also his own job security. And so I think he wants to exhaust all options, interview everyone he possibly can. And I think we're starting to see that with the fact that Pierre LeBrun made the announcement that the Ducks will interview Minnesota Duluth head coach Scott Sandelin, who's a head coach that, I mean, this really, I think, came out of left field.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would have predicted this. I don't think I even would have predicted the Ducks interviewing a college head coach, to be honest. And so it that side makes sense. From a Samuelis perspective, it also makes sense that they want Dallas Eakins to be the head coach of this Ducks team. I mean, we've talked about it for a while now. Logically, there's a whole lot of things going for Dallas to be the head coach of this team. The fact that he's worked with all of those guys in San Diego, the fact that the team's going to be similar to kind of some of the San Diego on that level, the fact that San Diego has had success, the fact that they just made the conference final and had a really good run this year while having a fair amount of injuries, guys being called up, called up and sent down. And so I really am of the opinion that even though this is going to be Bob Murray's last hire, the Samuelis are going to have a pretty big impact on this coach. And that's kind of why I still think if the Samuelis want Dallas Eakins, it's going to be Dallas Eakins that will be the head coach.
Right. So there's definitely a lot to unpack here. And it's always important to understand the internal dynamics and then look outward before looking outward. And I think that with, like you were just kind of breaking down here, the dynamic between Bob Murray and the Samuelis is pretty clear that Bob Murray got a 2-year extension. This is a GM who has, I think, a really high level of trust from ownership. I mean, he has a lot of gravity, I think, in that organization. He's been there for a long time, but good things come to an end. And Bob Murray has had some great successes as the Ducks GM. I would say generally it's hard to look at his tenure in Anaheim as anything but a success. I think overall the franchise mm-hmm. is in a decent place. They've been competitive. The seats have been filled for the most part. I mean, that's what you want. But at the same time, you know, things have definitely kind of turned away, which is what happens when you have a certain core and it starts aging. You take some big swings, and unless you win the cup, the other side of that is a lot more bitter than if you're in LA or a Chicago right now, where it sucks, but at least you have some cups to show for it. And that's kind of what happened to the Ducks here. And so I think, like you mentioned, you know, with Bob Murray, if he doesn't get this right, it's hard to imagine that he's going to be the Ducks GM beyond his current extension. Now, that being said, getting it right is obviously up for interpretation. I don't think that the Samuelis are expecting the Ducks to win the cup in the next 2 years. I don't hope they don't.
Yeah.
And But I do think that there has to be a clear positive momentum with this next hire. And so it has to be done properly. So on one hand, you could in a way question why they're taking so long, and you could whittle it down to Bob Murray's own, you know, individual motivations. But at the same time, is it not the proper thing to do to take the time that you need?
Yep.
Yes, the draft is this month. By the way, there's a draft, but you know, yep, the coach doesn't really run that anyway. But the point being, you want to have a show of organizational unity by the time you're at the draft.
And I think the other thing that you want is you want the general manager to be able to worry about the draft, worry about trades, worry about that type of stuff.
Right.
You'd rather this kind of whole coaching situation kind of be settled by now, so he can kind of go in and have all the scouts
have a little input. Yeah.
Yeah. And be able to know what he's looking at with that top, top 10 pick, and be able to figure out, as we're going to talk about at some point in time, what he wants to do with the trade market, what he wants to do to be able to reconstruct this team, because there's going to be some moves made this offseason.
Right. And so to kind of circle back to the head coaching situation. So I think it is prudent to definitely cast a wide net. There's definitely a lot of qualified individuals out there. You know, I think I am certainly of the belief that Dallas Eakins would be a good candidate, would be a good choice. I think that by now the Ducks have to know what they have in him. I mean, he's such a, and that's what I think I was saying the other day on Twitter, is that he's almost such a known commodity at this point that I think it's hurting him a little bit. Whereas some of the new candidates that are getting into the mix, it's like, well, there's a little less familiarity there, so you see them a little bit more in the light that you would like to see them. Whereas Dallas Eakins, the Ducks have worked very closely with him the last few years, and so they know him very well. They know all of his, and you know, they know the warts, they know the positives, and so I think that they know they have him in their back pocket, which if you're Dallas Eakins, must sting a little bit, because it's like, what more do I have to do to prove that I'm the guy for the job?
And we talked about this, I think, on Slack. It was you, me, and Daniel were chatting about this idea. Is it a slap in the face of Dallas that they're going out and getting these interviews? I think that if you're in Dallas Eakins' position, maybe, I mean, you would hope that kind of what you've done this past year and year and in years past, that's kind of enough of a resume to be able to prove to Bob Murray that you should be the head coach of this team. That's something you'd like to think, but I think you also have to understand that he's trying to
it's not just about you.
Yeah. No. And he's trying to do his job in the process also. And so I think that if at the end of the day, Dallas Eakins is the head coach of this team, I don't think there will be, and there should be, any ill will towards Bob Murray going out and getting all these interviews. Having said that, if Dallas Eakins is not the head coach of this team next year, I think it would be real hard to go back and be the head coach of San Diego after this.
It would be a little bit of a bittersweet thing, I think, for him. I think that if I were Dallas Eakins in this situation, I would do everything I could to not take it personally. You know, you just got to see the situation for what it is. I think that he has to trust that he has done enough to at least be. I mean, he's in a great position right now, either way. I mean, he's leading a promising AHL club, which should probably still be pretty good next year. And he is potentially about to make the leap back to the NHL. And you have to figure there's going to be other openings in the future, and he's probably going to be in a prime position to obtain those. But at the same time, having been so close to this organization, you would hope that they would just go straight to you and that would be the end of it. But clearly there's more to it than that. And I'm just trying to confirm here. So he was extended last year, and I'm trying to find out what the length of the extension is. Was it a one-year extension?
For Dallas?
So he has he received a multi-year contract extension last year from the Ducks, but I'm trying to find the specific number
for Dallas. Anyway. We're talking about Dallas Eakins, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, because I think that when basically the question is, if he's not the Ducks head coach, does he just basically bounce back into being the Gulls head coach? And I think that's probably what's going to happen. So just from a quick search here, I'm not finding the numbers specifically, but it's multi-year. So yeah, he's at least back for next season. Mm-hmm. Okay, but so looking... Go ahead.
Does he honor that? I think he will.
I mean, where's he going to go? What's the... Because now all the NHL true. Jobs are going to... The Ducks are the last team with an opening.
True.
The only unless there's an assistant spot, maybe.
Well, it's either that or go to a different AHL club.
Or would he accept being the assistant of a Ducks bench?
Maybe.
Being an assistant, maybe playing the long game and saying, would it be best for... Because in a way, for Dallas Eakins, it's interesting because he had that stint in with the Oilers, and getting fired kind of severely impacted his career because he hasn't been back in the NHL for a few years now. Yeah. You could argue maybe he could have been earlier and chose not to. Mm-hmm. But if he jumps back into a head coaching role and it goes poorly again,
that might be it for him.
Exactly. And so in a way, if you're Dallas Eakins' life counselor, career advisor, do you tell him, hey, maybe you want to start out as an assistant in the NHL and kind of
get that NHL time? He's been an assistant in the past.
He has been, but I'm saying right now, as a career move, is it better to start out with less pressure and then kind of work your way up?
I think most of the time what you'll see is guys be assistant coaches and then they'll actually go be AHL head coaches after that because they want to learn how to take all the reins in that type of situation. You brought this up. What if they hire Dallas Eakins and then bring in two of the guys that they're interviewing as assistant coaches?
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility, and we should probably start mentioning who some of those guys are. You brought up Pierre LeBrun tweeting yesterday. So this rumor mill is churning, and I think we're just going to start seeing more and more news. You usually don't see stuff come out on weekends. So to me, I'm really hoping that at least for a day, nothing happens, so this pod doesn't get instantly just made irrelevant. But Pierre LeBrun tweeting yesterday that the Anaheim Ducks will interview Minnesota Duluth head coach Scott Sandlin, like you mentioned earlier, as their search process continues. And that is a name that we haven't heard at all. I mean, we haven't even, I mean, thought of a, like you said, an NCAA coach, and all of a sudden they're looking at that. And if you want to look at comparables, guys who have made the leap recently, Montgomery in Dallas, obviously, that worked out pretty well first year. I'm trying to think the head coach with the Rangers, blanking on his name right now, but another head coach coming from the college ranks. So clearly there has been a move in the NHL in recent years. Sorry, David Quinn was the guy I was thinking of. It's just one of those things where, the NHL is starting to branch out into those kind of more new school avenues, guys who can maybe connect with quote-unquote millennial players. And the Ducks seem to be joining that movement. Now, of course, does that mean anything? It's just an interview.
Yeah,
I would view this as a positive, even though maybe Scott Sandlin doesn't get hired, or if he does, I think the consensus seems to be that he did a really good job at Minnesota Duluth, that they played a good up-tempo style. So does that pique your interest, Jake?
It does.
With obviously limited knowledge.
That's the thing, is that we don't really know a whole lot. I obviously can say I did not watch any of Minnesota Duluth this year. So
how dare you? You're not doing your homework.
I know. But if that's kind of his what he's known for, then that's definitely a good sign for the Ducks moving forward. I've also heard his defensive schemes are very good. And we'll see, though. It's really kind of an unknown, and that's kind of the situation we're in with a lot of these head coaches, is that we just really don't know. So here we go. I was able to find an article on him. So he's been with Minnesota Duluth, though, for 19 years.
There's that new blood.
Does that sound about right? He's 54 years old. So if that's the case,
as a head coach for 19 years, or
this article says Sandlin, who played at North Dakota and for seven seasons in the NHL, has 369, 311, and 87 record in 19 years at Minnesota Duluth. It's a long time to be coaching.
Yeah,
college team.
I mean, those are pretty cushy jobs. I mean, look at the coaches in NCAA football. They're like the richest public employees in their states. Yeah. I don't think the hockey coaches get anywhere close to that, but they probably make pretty good money, and you get to pick your team every year mm-hmm. with recruiting. It's a pretty good job. And, you know, so for Sandlin to be interviewing for an NHL position, he has to at least believe he has a chance.
Here's an interesting quote in this article from Sandlin. This was a quote from him after the Minnesota Duluth season ended. Said, "I'm not looking for any opportunity," and then added, "If somebody calls me, I'll listen. Right now, my plan is to be back at Duluth and be at Duluth for a long time, hopefully."
Yeah, well, money talks.
Yep, but I think that's interesting that means the Ducks, he wasn't known as putting himself out there to want to move right. on to the NHL. This was the Ducks wanting and reaching out to him to be able to get ahead, see if he would interview to be the head coach.
Well, what's interesting as well is just that there, I mean, unless I'm missing something, there isn't a clear link between him and the Anaheim organization, at least player-wise. I mean, I don't think there's any players on the Ducks roster right now that were at University of Minnesota Duluth, unless I'm forgetting someone.
I think Brandon Montour may have played there.
Yeah,
but
I'm trying
he's
to
not
think
on the team anymore. So
I'm trying to think where Josh Manson played. That could be
Northeastern.
Northeastern, yeah.
But
so
Andy Walensky may have played there.
Ah,
nope.
There it is.
Brandon Montour played University of Massachusetts Amherst.
Yeah, so. He's a UMass guy. No, definitely not. Yeah, so I don't
Let
know.
Check
There's
on
not
this real quick.
But you know the way that these things work, there's always some connection somewhere between the organization and a candidate. It's a small world, the hockey world. So.
There we go. Andy Walensky, 4 years at University of Minnesota Duluth, including being the captain of the team in his final year.
Boom.
The
there
Andy
it is.
Walensky connection.
Has to be it. Andy Walensky, the guy who, maybe not on the ice, but turning the Ducks the new leaf over with his connection.
Unrestricted free agent, Andy Walensky.
Yes. So before we break down the rest of the list, we're going to take a short break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And we are back to break down the rest of the list. So, I don't know, Sandlin seems like a good candidate. Admittedly, have not seen a whole lot out of that team or his style, but I do support widening the net and seeing what you can get from kind of the retreads. Although I guess at this point, the Philadelphia Flyers have taken them all. Another name that entered the fray this week.
Real quick, I did want to make mention those quotes, and that information came from the Star Tribune. So wasn't that pulling out? Was not pulling that out of kind of nowhere. Or from an unreliable source, the Star Tribune's one of the newspapers for in Minnesota.
Okay, so definitely a reliable source there. We are 100% not pulling rabbits out of thin air.
Not all the time, at least.
Just some of the time. Some of the time. Okay, now another candidate, Todd Nelson, who I believe may have been linked to the Ducks in the past. Last time they were looking around,
I don't think he was. Another candidate that we're going to be looking at was, though.
Yes. So Todd Nelson, who has been one of those guys who just has experience kind of all over the place. He's won a Calder Cup with the Grand Rapids Griffins. He's been a head coach in the NHL with the Edmonton Oilers, just like Dallas Eakins. So
replaced
Dallas Eakins, and it didn't go so well for him either. Missed the playoffs, going 17-22 in a 46-game stint with the Oilers, but has been a good AHL head coach. There's been a lot of chatter about how he's a forward-thinking guy, you know, looks at numbers, kind of uses different tactics, and he's always been one of those names, along with Dallas Eakins, that of those younger kind of up-and-coming coaches. And he seems definitely like a guy who would be a viable candidate. He was an assistant coach for the Dallas Stars this season. So for you, we don't have to spend a whole lot of time talking about each and every candidate, but Thumbs up or down, Ty Nelson?
Not exactly sure.
Not thrilled. Not thrilled.
Not thrilled. I mean, you know me. I've been on the bandwagon for Dallas Eakins now for a while.
Yes.
We should also scratch.
Between him and Eakins, there's not a whole lot separating them.
Agreed. And
I think Nelson has a little more tangible success at the AHL level. I mean, you can't really top a Calder Cup. So
yeah. And so I think for me, kind of the tiebreaker there between the two is the familiarity with the players. And granted, this is also a completely biased view on it, but also the different fluff type pieces that we've seen on Dallas Eakins about being able to connect with those different players and all that different type of stuff. I think that's something that you want to see succeed, and I'd like to see him get a chance with the Ducks. Granted, I admit that's a completely biased point of view on that, and I'll accept that. With a lot of these coaches, that it's very hard to fully tell. The only one that really I think we knew a fair amount about that was a little bit different in his way of thinking is now actually completely off the board with Toronto. Didn't they announce a contract extension?
Sheldon Keefe.
Didn't they?
Yes.
Did they announce an extension or just? Yeah, it was. Okay. So
he's
staying there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was someone that you had targeted.
Yep.
Targeted sounds weird. We're not after anyone. Another guy, another name. We're just going down the list here. I promise we're not going to spend, like I said, a ton of time on each guy because we just don't have a whole lot to say for each person.
Yep.
Lane Lambert, who it's interesting how when a name starts popping up, what other voices start chirping it up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Lane Lambert, who all of a sudden is just, you know, a player's coach, you know, very personable, you know, potentially forward thinking, was an assistant for Barry Trotz. And, you know,
AHL head coach also for Nashville's affiliates.
With each, what you'll notice with the NHL, and this probably applies to other sports as well, but that every great head coach, usually there's a really good assistant coach that kind of joins them at the hip. You know, to me, the example that comes to my mind right away is Jay Woodcroft and Todd McClellan. You know, Jay Woodcroft has often been described as a really strong tactician and a big reason for the success that the Sharks had when McClellan was the main man. And with Lane Lambert, it's very much that same type of situation. He was an assistant in Nashville to Barry Trotz, an assistant in Washington when they won the Stanley Cup, and then an associate head coach this season with the New York Islanders. And he does seem like a guy, and this is kind of a theme that I'm noticing in the non-Dallas Eakins type candidates, is that he seems like a very kind of sturdy, reliable, defensively stout option. You know, you look at the Predators under Barry Trotz before they switched to Laviolette, and they were not really known like they're known now. They were a kind of a boring team. You know, when Shea Weber was headlining that team, you know, they were more of a grind it out, slow it down type squad. And the one of the reasons that the Capitals have been credited for winning that cup in 2018 was that they embraced more of the 5-on-5 aspect, you know, became less of a run and gun style team. And then you go to the Islanders this season. You know, they went from being the worst team in the NHL defensively to not really elite, but definitely a marked improvement. And, of course, great goaltending definitely helps covers up a lot of weaknesses. So, to me, Lambert seems like a guy who could bring the kind of structure that the Ducks have been missing. And he does seem to have some good personality there as well.
Yeah,
but you're less excited about it.
Well, I think if that's what we're pegging him as being a defensively structured head coach, I don't think that's what this team exactly needs moving forward. I think kind of more what I've seen as him is or seen from him in terms of everything that's been written about him is he's kind of more so in the Rod Brindamore mold. That's what everyone's kind of compared him to.
Right, the personality aspect,
a players type coach that will just let them play. That's kind of at least what I've seen, which isn't exactly that defensive structure type situation. It's really hard, though, and this is something I know it's a cop-out a little bit when we say this, but it's hard to fully evaluate these coaches without some sort of sample size. With Todd Nelson and with Dallas Eakins, we can have some actual tangible sample size at an NHL level and be able to kind of try to take something away from that. Granted, both of them came in very rough situations with Edmonton, I guess being Edmonton, there's really no better way to put it.
Right.
And so you have to take some of it with a grain of salt, but there is something that we can take away from it. Look at different interviews. Look at how he addressed things. Look at even what he said about his time there and how he learned a lot from it, with Dallas Eakin specifically saying that. Whereas with Lane Lambert, all we can look at is with him and his assistant coach at the NHL level and how much of an impact do assistant coaches really have. That's kind of something that could be up for debate. It's not really something I think we could ever tangibly know one way or the other. How much is the head coach doing? How much are the assistant coaches doing? You see the blame pinned on assistant coaches from time to time with getting fired, but how much of that is just warning shots being fired? How much of it is actually trying to make an impact? I don't know.
Right. No, that's a fair point. And that's the difficulty with bringing an assistant coach, is that it's almost harder to evaluate them than, although they are in the NHL, it's almost harder to evaluate them because at least an AHL head coach or even a college head coach, you have a very clear-cut idea of what kind of coach they are because they're calling the shots at that point.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, an associate or an assistant head coach is still kind of bending their will to what the head coach wants. But that's, there's still something to be gleaned there.
Yeah.
And I should have mentioned, I think what I said about Lane Lambert is more pertinent for the other candidate we're about to talk about. But yeah, he's been a guy who's definitely described as personable, who seems to be kind of more of an open door type coach, which all indications are that the Randy Carlyle regime was not quite that. So let's just say it that way. Okay. And then another guy, Rick Bowness. He, to me, I was assigned to write an article about him for Anaheim Calling, which you should definitely go check out. Very, very interesting topic. I'm sure you're dying to read about this guy. Yeah, but no, what is interesting about it is that Rick Bowness has been an assistant head coach in the NHL for over a decade. I mean, he's basically a career assistant, and his only head coaching stints have been wildly unsuccessful. But then you look at who he coached, and it was the expansion Ottawa Senators. I don't think there's any winning that one. And then the Mike Milbury-led New York Islanders of the late 90s. I believe it's Mike Milbury. I could get that wrong. And then a brief stint in Phoenix, in the early 2000s. So there's not really a whole lot to go off of there. So you have to then start thinking about the teams where he was an assistant coach in Vancouver that went very well. Tampa Bay also very well. And then a good season in Dallas. He is definitely the guy who is the defensive tactician, I guess you could say. He's definitely the guy who I think is probably the least exciting option. But
100%.
He has been described as the type of coach who does a good job of connecting with younger players. He does seem like a guy who knows how to balance out overcoaching, whereas just letting guys play. It's another kind of constant that we're seeing with these candidates, is they all seem to be very personable. And Bonus has gotten some credit for helping develop Miro Heiskanen and Victor Hedman. Of course, that's total chicken and the egg territory.
Yeah.
But still, he is another guy who, although he is definitely not on the younger side among this group, he's 64, he's another guy who, if he's not the head coach, I actually would be curious to see him as an assistant, Anaheim, because I think that you kind of need a Rick Bonus on your staff. And anyway, so am I missing any names here? I think that's all of them.
I think,
unless another one just popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think that is all of them as far as I can really remember. Yeah, I don't think there's really any others that have shot off the list as being potential head coaches for this Ducks team.
The only thing to
add is potentially we know Bob Murray said he wanted to wait to see for teams to be done with their playoff run to be able to
Only two left
ask for permission. Well, there's technically four teams if there's any assistant coaches with Boston or St. Louis.
Well,
they may
well
potentially
Charlotte
want to interview.
Charlotte just won the Calder Cup. So.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
I just missed that. So
Yeah. So
definitely tuned out the Calder Cup playoffs after the goals were out of it. So.
Or no, they didn't win it. Wow, that's a total. They won their first.
Wow.
They got their first win in Calder Cup final history. Jeez,
damn it.
Misinterpretation. Yeah. I apologize to all my AHLers.
That timeline
brutal
seems way off.
So there's four teams, but realistically there's three because we know Sheldon Keefe isn't coming off of the Marley staff. Or no, he's in
the Marlies aren't even there.
Jeez. Oh my goodness.
You
the
are
worst part
struggling.
The worst part is I actually follow the AHL somewhat closely and I just got everything wrong.
You 100%
okay.
Did. So there's Rocky Thompson's a name that's been thrown around.
Yes. That's really the one, I think.
Yeah.
That's really the
agreed.
One. So really it's maybe Rocky Thompson joins this field, and then you have the Boston and St. Louis staffs. But there haven't really been any names that, you know, even for the other vacancies that are now filled, it doesn't seem like there are any names of those two staffs that were really out there. So it's tough to say. Mm-hmm. Prediction time. Okay, so let's start here. Do you think that the Ducks will have a head coach by the end of this week?
I'm going to say no.
No?
No.
I think I'm going to agree with you. Boring answer, but I think I'm going
to
agree with you.
I think that maybe they'll be close to a decision, but Bob Murray's going to want to wait till after the Cup Final's over to not take away the attention.
Jake is throwing up the air quotes.
I was really struggling to figure out where that was on my camera, so...
Bob Murray's obsession with the political correctness is my favorite thing.
Because I'm sure
that's not what it actually is.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's something totally different. I think I'm gonna agree with you. I think it's gonna take more than a week.
Do you think there's any chance this is something that Fire Carlisle didn't exactly speculate on if the Ducks would do, but kind of brought this up right now. Do the Ducks maybe take a run at Craig Berube if St. Louis doesn't pony up?
I think they'll pony up.
I agree with that also because
I think they should.
Yeah, Doug Armstrong came out and basically said that our coaching search is a search of one.
Yeah. Here's my only pushback on the it'll take more than a week thing. A non-trivial amount of people that are closely connected to the situation, so reporters, media, are saying it's going to heat up. It's going to heat up. So is there there's clearly something we don't know that they can't report. So maybe it'll happen. Maybe it'll happen this week. You know, I take it all back just for the sake of the pod, for entertainment value. I'm going to say we have a coach Friday morning.
So we're going to have to do a pod next Friday then.
Yes. And my prediction, I'm going to jump out ahead of it, is that it will be Dallas Eakins.
Yeah.
Still the leading candidate to me. I feel like all of this is just to make sure that there's not a better candidate. I think that's what this is all about. And I don't know if you can really do that in one interview if you're one of these guys. Unless you just knock it out of the park, which is possible, I guess.
If the owner of the team says they want a specific coach.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
After the Randy Carlisle debacle, they're going to get the head coach they want.
I think that, yes, you're right. I think that Bob Murray is going to need an airtight, ironclad case for one of these candidates to sway the ownership. And he's done it before. He got Randy Carlisle rehired. Yeah. So, and you know, he's got to be a good salesman.
Yeah. But I think that does he lose a little bit of the weight with his sales job with the fact of how Randy Carlisle's tenure ended?
If I'm the guy writing the checks and I'm sitting across from him in that meeting, I'm saying, well, how can I buy what you're selling at this point if the last thing you sold me was a defective product? So
I like that.
We'll
I
see.
Like that.
We shall see. I think it'll be Dallas Eakins. But the thing that kind of sucks about this, and again, this is why I wanted to differentiate between the internal dynamic and the external search, is that the candidates that Bob Murray is looking at right now are great qualified candidates who I think would all make fine choices. So it's unfortunate that he has maybe, we don't know, lost a little equity, because this time around, I think that the people he's looking to bring in are actually very worthy, and maybe they'll come in as assistant coaches. I'm assuming that whoever comes in is going to have the option to form their staff. I would hope so. I mean, I wouldn't want to foist Mark Morrison or Marty Wilford onto anyone. So we'll see.
Even last time, you look at the overall coaches that he was looking at hiring, he was looking at the correct guys. He was looking obviously Randy Carlyle, not exactly the right guy, and he was the one that was picked, but Rick Bonus was in the mix. Dallas Aikens was in the mix. Trevor Green. Travis Green.
I mean, and that was another pick that has seemingly worked out pretty well for the Canucks. So,
yeah.
Really, we've talked about this a lot in the past, but it's that Randy Carlyle blind spot that almost resulted in a fatal crash, changing lanes.
Loyalty to your friends,
yeah,
can come back to get you a little bit in a work environment.
Absolutely. So, up next topic. Should we cut for a break?
Oh,
here?
Mike Yeo was also interviewed last time.
That's
another bad one.
Yeah. On that note, our second brief intermission. And we are back from intermission 2. So let's get on to our next topic here. And this is going to be obviously a lot more kind of speculative here, although I guess we just predicted the Ducks coaching future. So we're just par for the course here. News broke last week that Jason Zucker, a trade had been consummated between both the Minnesota Wild and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jack Johnson and Phil Kessel to Pittsburgh in exchange for Jason Zucker and Victor Rask. The trade was nixed due to Phil Kessel's no trade clause. So, an absolutely bizarre trade was broken up. Thank God for the Minnesota Wild and their fans that this didn't happen, because it would have been a truly bizarre trade.
Phil Kessel saved them.
But as a result of the news kind of leaking out, Mike Russo of the Athletic did report that Anaheim was a team that has been interested in Zucker. And it's interesting because on its face, you would wonder why they'd be looking to bring in another winger specifically. Yeah. But there's been a lot of stuff coming out lately how, you know, Zucker's underlying numbers are actually really, really good at 5-on-5, you know, from a scoring rate perspective to just his on-ice rates. There's just a lot of interesting stuff there. And you wonder if you put him on a good power play, you could maybe see that rise as well.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at his with and without you or with or without you stats with various different line mates, basically anyone that plays for him benefits from it. Their numbers rise up. He has a pretty positive impact on shot rates for the Minnesota Wild in the offensive zone. He's a good player. He's a player that I think at first when I saw it, I was kind of confused for basically the reasons of this just adds a log jam to the left-hand side because he's a left winger. He's under contract for the next 4 seasons at a cap hit of $5.5 million. And as I've broken down in the past, the Ducks actually have a fair amount of cap to work with. So that's actually not a big concern of mine. Yeah. Although,
they could just absorb him right now.
Yeah.
But
although the issue that you could run into is 4 years down the line, are you going to be in the same cap situation? Maybe you are going to have guys.
Well, also the Ducks have a lot of RFAs. They have another busy RFA summer next summer.
But then again, they're also going to have some money coming off the board at a certain point, so it's going to help out there. I mean, a really similar contract to this is the one that I was very against signing in Jakob Silfverberg. And honestly, if you look at the two players and look at how they've scored historically, yes, Jason Zucker has a 30 goal season. Jakob Silfverberg does not. But if you look at their historical scoring rates, they're very similar players. I would say it seems like Silverberg's probably a bit better in the defensive zone, whereas Jason Zucker drives play forward a little bit more in the offensive zone. But in terms of what the final product both produce, I think it's very similar, which means that he's a good player. He has a positive impact on your roster. And so I think, like I said, the reason why I was skeptical of it is that on that left-hand side right now, you have Ricard Raquel, Nick Ritchie. You have technically Devin Shores potentially being on that side also. And then you also have Max Jones and Max Comtois. And so you have a little bit of a logjam on that side. You also have the potential for Kiefer Sherwood to maybe play the left side. just to get into the lineup. So it's just adding someone who's under contract for 4 years when you have these kids that will be coming up. And you also have, like I said, Devin Shore, who's granted he's an RFA after next season, so he'll probably be with the club a little bit longer. So yeah. It's just where, when you bring in Zucker, where do these kids kind of fit in?
Right, and that's the thing. And so I wrote an article about this earlier in the week at AnaheimCalling.com, a really great website. It's super awesome. You should check it out. but I hypothesized about a potential Zucker move and what it could look like for the Ducks. And naturally, a lot of people didn't agree because it's not a trade that is kind of one of those one-size-fits-all, every problem gets fixed in one move type trade. It's more of chipping away at different little issues to give you less problems down the line and to also make what I believe would be the current team better. So here's what I proposed. I proposed, and this is not really like a final offer, it's just more like a starting point. You could move Adam Henrik and Nick Ritchie to Minnesota in exchange for Zucker. And so you're getting off of Henrik's contract. He would have to agree to this trade. If it happens before July 1st, I think is the takeaway there. He has a no trade clause.
Yeah.
But what you do by trading Ritchie, so let's start with the left wing, is that you're relieving a little bit of that logjam. I still think Nick Ritchie's a decent player, but if you look at who's coming in, you know, Contois Jones specifically, I think you kind of would rather give them those spots at this point if you have to choose, and just at least find out what you have in them. Whereas Nick Ritchie, I feel like he's kind of a known commodity at this point. I feel like he is what he's going to be. And if he works out for Minnesota, great. Also, they did have a very drawn-out negotiation between the Ritchie camp and the Ducks. So I don't know how that next negotiation is going to go in only two seasons. Maybe the relationship isn't the strongest there. And then Adam Henrik, I just don't think it's a very good contract for the Ducks long term.
Yeah.
He's got 4 years left at 5.8. I think he's just a very okay player. But on the flip side, I think for Minnesota, he strengthens their center depth a little bit, and Nick Ritchie gives them kind of another young piece. And keep in mind, the Minnesota Wild right now are not rational actors. We're not sure what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that those are the kinds of teams you actually want to pick up the phone with, because you can maybe get. And so I think, to me, out of those three, Jason Zucker is clearly the best player.
Yeah.
And I know that some people might not agree with that. But so if you chip away at the logjam on left wing, yes, you may get a little weaker at center in the short term. Devin Shore can move back to center. But I think Zucker kind of mitigates some of that because he's going to make that top six stronger.
Yep. Yeah, and so looking kind of from the Minnesota side of this, because obviously we're touching on it from the Ducks' perspective, but in order for a trade to work, it has to make sense for both sides of the trade. So Mikko Koivu, Victor Rask, Eric Staal, and Joel Eriksson Ek, and I actually don't even think Victor Rask plays at center that much, but those are your centers for the Minnesota Wild. So Mikko Koivu, Eric Staal, and Joel Eriksson Ek. So they need another center, and they need someone who's going to be a second or third line center. Mikko Koivu is only signed for next season. He's UFA after that. He's also pretty old, so he may be being phased out. He's 36 years old. Eric Staal is also old, so this kind of gives them a second line center for years to come. And granted, you might say that the Ducks kind of want that, but I think the Ducks want to get out of that contract at this point, because Getzlaf is signed for a couple more years. You have to deal with the Kessler contract, even though it can go on LTIR. So I think it makes sense for the Wild, and it gives them a bit of protection for Joel Eriksson Ek, because once Eric Staal and Mikko Koivu are gone, Eriksson Ek is probably going to become the first line center for them, and you're going to want someone from behind him that can fill in and play on the power play and kind of do everything, be on the penalty kill. And so I think that Adam Henrik kind of fills that for him. And as much as we kind of don't love what value he brings to that contract, he is a valuable player and can kind of do everything for the team. And so I think that makes him kind of a valuable piece for the Wild to be looking at. And so you'll be getting his salary off the books and taking on the salary of Jason Zucker, which are fairly similar in terms of the amount that you'll be taking on. And then you give him Nick Ritchie also to kind of sweeten the pot. And so, like you said, or like Felix said, we're looking at this, and the Wild aren't exactly completely logical. So even if this does seem like a win on the surface for the Ducks, that's I think makes sense right now with the looking at the fact that
they get the best player in the trade. To me, that's what you always want.
Well, you look at the trade that was being proposed: Jack Johnson and Phil Kessel for Zucker and Rask, like,
which is a huge overpay for
awful.
I mean, I love Phil Kessel and he's extremely productive, but I think I would probably rather have Zucker on my team right now.
Why would you want Jack Johnson?
And then, I think that Jack Johnson is thrown in there because the Wild are attaching Rask, you know, or wait. So if you're sending out Rask and Zucker, I think that again this is probably Paul Fenton just getting steamrolled at the negotiating table because
it's bad.
He is probably operating under the mindset that Phil Kessel is the most valuable asset in this deal, and so I'm going to do whatever it takes to get him. So I'm going to send this guy who doesn't want to be here because I've already tried to trade him once. And I'm going to attach this young player to make sure I get Kessel. But then Jim Rutherford, being the shark that he is, is going to say, okay, well, look, I want to make this happen, but you have to take Jack Johnson. And so Paul Fenton says, okay, yes, done deal. And then it didn't happen because Phil Kessel doesn't want to go play for a mediocre team. I get that. So that's where this kind of leaves the Ducks, where they can kind of swoop in and probably name their price a little bit and get the best of the deal. And I don't love trading Nick Ritchie just because I think he's a good contract and he's a guy who...
You're selling low.
And you're selling low and you're also kind of betting pretty big that all of these young guys are going to be NHL players next season, which we don't necessarily know. As much as we can speculate whether or not Max Jones and Max Contois will be in the NHL, it's still a bit of an unknown. But I do think that even with Nick Ritchie out, you're still in a good spot depth-wise. You still have Sherwood and Sprong as potential extra forwards. It's not a terrible position to be in. I also just expect these guys to be... I do expect at least Terry, at least Sam Steele to be better next year.
Yeah.
And I think Contois probably could have played in the NHL this season. I mean, he did. Could have played the entire season already. So it's going to be interesting. That's kind of the... It's been a conversation. I don't see it happening because I think the Ducks are probably kind of in stand pat mode right now. I don't know if that's necessarily the best course of action. I think probably if the Ducks were to make a move right now, the most logical thing would be to just try to get off bad contracts, which they're not going to do. They're not going to trade Corey Perry right now. They're not going to trade Ryan Getzlaff. They can't really trade Ryan Kessler. They can't trade Patrick Eves. So really what it comes down to is, like, can you move, let's say, a Cam Fowler contract, which is looking worse and worse by the day. So that's really where this leaves you. Any kind of final thoughts on the trade rumor mill?
It's interesting to me that kind of this name popped up, and it's funny kind of the mind juggling that I had to go through on it, because initially I was very much against the idea of it, thinking that it was going to take a prospect to get him. It was going to take a high pick or something like that. But then after...
The Ducks can swing that. Maybe they can include Victor Rask in there.
But after thinking about it more, and after you and I talked about it in Slack and with various other people from the staff, using this to be able to get off of Adam Henrique's contract, I think, is the one way that I'm really okay with this deal and bringing
that's
that
the biggest win. Yeah, that's the biggest win of all this. Yeah. And so I teased a little debate before the show, and we're running a little high on time here.
We are.
So we're going to try to make this quick. But I promised a debate. You're probably not going to get a heated one here, but, so Scott Cullen, formerly of TSN, wrote a pretty good overview of the Ducks offseason on his personal blog and talked about the possibility of the Ducks trading Corey Perry. And this was something that was kind of bandied about on The Athletic last week as well, or at least moving on from Corey Perry. So whether that's the form of a buyout or a trade. And so some people are pushing for this, and Corey Perry has, I believe, reappeared on the trade bait board for Frank Cervalli's list. So
Frank Cervalli.
Well, I'm just saying, where do you stand on this, Jake? Surprise everyone.
Oh, this is going to be no surprise. Corey Perry's not getting traded. He's not getting bought out. Mm-hmm. He's not moving. He has a let me really touch on the trade thing first.
Mm-hmm.
He has a full no move clause.
Right.
In order for him to be moved, he has to agree to the team that he's going to. He has to agree to leave the Ducks. At this point in time, I kind of think that's doubtful. He has all the championships that he's won. He lives here. He has his family here. He's probably comfortable here. Probably loves the life that he can live during the season here, not with the pressure that he would get from somewhere else. I just don't foresee a trade happening for that reason. And that's something I always point to. He has a full no move clause. He can say no. And so that's the biggest thing. The other thing on in terms of a buyout, I think from what we've heard from management and looking at the cap situation, buying him out, it gives you relief this year, but it makes the contract go from 2 years to 4 years. And so if you were to buy out that contract, why don't I just do it while we're here? But if you were to...
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, if you were to buy out his contract, where is his deal? There it is. If you were to buy out his contract, essentially, instead of it being 8.625 mil cap hit this year and next, this year you'd have a cap hit of 2.625. Next season would be a cap hit of 6.625, and then 2 mil for 2021-22 and 2022-23. So essentially, this year you get a big cap saving about 6 mil. Next year it's only about a 2 mil cap saving, and you still have that extra 2 mil cap hit for the two seasons following that. So
see, if the Ducks were on the cusp of cup contention right now, I would be more pro that line of thinking, because every dollar matters and you want to, you know, add, you're adding. But right now they don't really, there isn't as much of a need to open up this space.
No.
There, you know, and that's kind of, I guess I'm giving away where I stand. It's what I do find interesting though, to the no move clause point, is that there's been a lot of talk in recent days about how Patrick Marleau could be on the move from the Toronto Maple Leafs. At first it was the LA Kings. Now all of a sudden it's the Arizona Coyotes. It still may not happen, but he as well, he has a no move clause, and it seems like the Maple Leafs are comfortable potentially asking him to waive it. I mean, that it's interesting how on one hand, I do agree with you that Corey Perry having a no move clause kind of cements the fact that it's probably never going to get traded, but you see other organizations that seem a lot more willing to engage in that kind of talk than the Ducks are.
Well, I mean, I think the reason why they're willing to engage in that talk is probably if he doesn't get moved, then he's probably going to get bought out.
And he's also but the thing is, for the Leafs though, him getting bought out doesn't really do anything for them,
because he's on that
35 plus contract.
That's
exactly. That's right. So they're in a weird spot where they actually have to trade him.
Yeah. Or, then again, the Leafs could trade.
They could basically trade his cap hit, and he could retire. That could be because even if he retires, they still incur the cost. But I think the difference with Marleau is that he's already changed places once in his career, and his family has already moved back to San Jose now. And
really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he has 1 year left on his deal. So for him, it's kind of like a 12-month commitment either way at this point. Whereas with Perry, I mean, he still has 2 full years left on his deal, so he's not quite at this finish line mode yet. It would be really weird if Patrick Marleau retired just so that the Leafs could re-sign Mitch Marner.
And I think the other thing with Corey Perry is, and this was the other point I was going to make with him getting bought out, is no, he's not worth 8.625. I've said that many times on this podcast. But you look at what he did at the end of the season. He looked good, actually, and coming back off that knee surgery. I think it was the knee surgery at the end of the day was good for him, and I think that you heard that from Ducks management. They were happy with how he was going. And so it really feels like they want to give him a chance next year to be able to rebound from that knee surgery, have a full off season to get into shape and really kind of go forward with it. And so at that point in time, you only have 1 year left on that deal then after next season. I don't really foresee them.
Is also trading him now, looking to do that now, you're not trading him at anywhere close to peak value.
He needs
to have at least another good season before you can even think about that.
And basically, in order to trade him, let's say for whatever purpose, he was willing to move his no movement clause. Mm-hmm. You're gonna lose the trade. If you're not retaining cap hit, you're gonna really get. You may have to give up more in order for someone to take that contract.
To me, if you can win that trade by the value of opening up cap space.
Yes, but the point is you're going to lose it by it. You're going to give up an asset also if you're going to be – if someone's taking on that full cap it, mm-hmm. you're going to have to give up something else in order for them to take it. That's simply how it works.
I think there's a deal to be made that can work. I agree with you. There's a lot of factors that are probably going to make sure that doesn't happen. But I don't think you necessarily lose a deal at just whatever the outcome is, you lose that deal. I think that there's ways you can make it work. If you have to retain a little salary, I'm fine with that, because if you're operating on the assumption that they're just going to ride it out and that's going to be it, if I have to retain but I get picks or a prospect, to me that's a win, because those are positive value assets, whereas right now Corey Perry doesn't have a lot of positive value. That's just kind of the way that the league works. And so it's going to be interesting. I agree with you. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's something they should at least consider.
Yeah, and one thing that I did want to mention is that trade makes sense if you are tight to the cap, and like you said, and if you're contending, you're willing to kind of do anything to make it work.
There's urgency for that trade if that's the situation here. There's no urgency for that trade right now.
Like we've talked about in the past, the Ducks have 9.125 mil in cap space right now,
and they're going to get more next year as well, with Eves probably retiring.
Yeah, and that's prior to Eves going on LTIR, which I know there's
and
been.
Kessler.
It's weird. I feel like there's been some chatter that the Ducks have to be underneath the cap with all of these guys, and as far as I know, with my understanding, that's not exactly the case. You can go 10% over the salary cap in summer. Mm-hmm. And then once you hit training camp, you can actually put guys on long-term injured reserve. Ooh, I was struggling with that for a sec. Long-term injured reserve prior to the season starting during training camp, so that by opening night, you are cap compliant. So if those guys go on LTIR during training camp, then you can still go over the cap by their cap hit. So essentially, the Ducks can go 10% over the salary cap over summer and then maintain that one and put Patrick Eves and Ryan Kessler on LTIR prior to the season.
Yeah, so on that note, I think we should wrap up. We crossed the hour mark.
Ooh, really quick, let's hit a couple questions. We got some right now from Lewis. Said, which top free agent do you see the Ducks realistically targeting?
I don't think they're targeting any.
I think if anything, it's going to be like an Anton Strahlman.
Yeah, top, quote-unquote top free agent.
Fair. Oh, I did see one thing, and I wanted to bring this up, or two things. We'll kind of blitz through them real quick. There's Patrick Laine rumors that have come out about him wanting out of Winnipeg.
Yes.
Have you seen these?
I haven't seen the specific rumors, but our own Benny from Anaheim Calling asking on Twitter, what would it take to pry Laine out of Winnipeg, and why hasn't Murray already done it? Cost? Probably too high. I also don't know if the Ducks are willing to give up what the Jets are probably going to ask for in that trade, which is going to be probably Troy Terry. Or Comtois. I mean, I think that's where the conversation starts.
He also is RFA, so you could just offer sheet him.
Yeah, but, I mean, realistically, I guess you could do that. I don't see Bob Murray being that GM. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think that the Ducks are just not the kind of an organization that's hunting these things. You know, they stay very much, in their own lane and maybe pounce here and there when they have to. But I don't see them really getting in on that sweepstakes.
Yep, I think that will probably do it. The only other thing was someone had mentioned about who's going to be centers and if the Ducks take Zegras. I want to just briefly mention Trevor Zegras. If the Ducks who take him, that's kind of a player in the range. He actually will be at Denver University next year. So
on that note, thank you very much for listening, everyone. Make sure to check out all the different ways that you can support our podcast. So first and foremost, Apple Podcasts, just search Anaheim Calling. Leave us a rating and a review. That's probably the number one way you can help support. That really helps the show climb up the rankings and helps us spread this to more fans who may just not be aware of our pod. We want to, as many Ducks fans to know that we're an option, because you do have some options.
Yep.
Another avenue that I do want to mention here, our Patreon. So this is another way you can support the show, patreon.com/acpod for $5 a month. You get two bonus episodes. Right now we are previewing the entire league division by division for the off season. So that's at $5. And at the $1 tier, you also get access to our supporter-only chat, Discord chat. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. When news are breaking or different things like that, we can just discuss it live. And then, of course, we do stream our episodes live on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/acpod. If you are an Amazon Prime member, you can get a free Twitch Prime membership, which also helps support the show. If you're a current Twitch Prime subscriber, make sure to renew month to month, because it does not automatically renew. The Twitch chat is a lot of fun, especially during the season. We can see your questions live in the feed as you're posing them, and then we get to discuss right away. We've had a lot of fun there in the past, so that's definitely another great way to support. On social media, Jake is on Twitter, at ReindeerGames91. No longer sporting the Tottenham profile picture.
Nope. Lasted for a day. Still a mourning. This one, it really stung. Really stung.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It'll be okay. Yeah. It'll be okay.
Well, only like 2 months till the season starts back up again? Something like that?
Because it was kind of like a house money type situation. That's why I don't... Like, if the Warriors lose, I'll be crushed in this finals, because
This is the fifth straight final, but
it'd be the end of an era. Like, they're probably not going to be back after this year, you know.
Here's real quick where I'm at with Tottenham, which is why this is a similar type situation to that, where I feel like this was the last kick at the can for this group at Tottenham. Granted, they could be better next year. They're probably going to spend a lot of money after going a year without spending money on anyone. But we're probably going to lose Eriksen. Fingers crossed Pochettino stays, like I hope and everyone hopes he does, like he said he has. But there's potential that this could be a very different Spurs team next year, and this is the team that kind of made me fall in love with European soccer, and that's kind of what makes me so sad.
Yeah, we've got a lot on the line here. You've already had your heart broken. Who knows? Thanks. I'll be next. But the Thanks. Warriors did tie the series up 1-1 tonight, so we'll see. The Stanley Cup final still going on. We're probably going to do a pod soon for the bonus supporters on Patreon, breaking that down. Kind of a boring series. It's just like blowout after blowout, basically. Who would have thought the NBA finals would actually be kind of more exciting this year than the NHL finals? Anyway, I'm on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. Make sure to check out AnaheimCalling.com at Anaheim Calling. As we approach the draft, we're going to do a big draft preview. I mean, we're now in the month of June, so it's coming up. Stay tuned for that. And make sure to keep it locked in to Anaheim Calling, like I said, just as these news come in for the head coaching search. So we will talk to you at the next podcast. Thanks for listening.
Bye.